Inspiration can strike in many ways, and our first author of the month for 2026 proves just that. Paul Waters was born and grew up in Northern Ireland during the Troubles. His wife, Anisha, grew up in Delhi, and Paul's auntie was an Irish nun. Put the three together, and the result is Murder in Moonlit Square, an Irish-Indian cosy crime story, and I'm very pleased to say, our first author of the month for 2026. Paul Waters, welcome to the programme.
Hello, thank you, Drew. That's a very good way of putting it. The combination of people, weird meeting.
It is strange how fate can strike. And as a writer, I guess you're never quite sure when that's going to happen.
That's true. You just have to keep an open mind, keep your eyes open, keep your ears open. It's a bit like constantly eavesdropping on the world and not just everyone else around you. And you never know where ideas will come, as you say. And I had a friend, you have to be careful though, because I had a friend who came back from America, and he was also a writer, and he carried a notebook with him. And anytime somebody said something interesting or quaintly English, he would take a note, and people began to think this was very weird. And I said, look, if you're going to do it, at least sneak into the toilets and do it in a cubicle where nobody can see you. Otherwise, nobody will speak at all around you. So I try and remember it. And
You married your wife, Anisha. She was from Delhi. How did the two of you meet?
well, I'd like to say we met in a very glamorous surroundings of, Thornbury Castle, walls, moat, portcullis, drawbridge, and that sort of thing. But it was in a pub called the Thornbury Castle in London, which is also very nice, near Marylebone Station. And she's originally from Chandigarh in the north of India, in kind of Punjab, but she grew up in Delhi. And I'm from Belfast, as you said. But we met in London. And it was only after we were married that we realized that we had another pre-existing family link. So I had an aunt, a real life aunt, Irish nun called Sister Agatha. I say a real life one because I also have a fictional one in my book of the same name. And Agatha was, she trained as a nun, and her mother wanted her to stay home in the west of Ireland. And she asked the Mother Superior, but was told, no, Agatha is too strong-willed. The walls of Gortnar Abbey aren't high enough to hold Agatha. So they shipped her off via Rome to India, and she had her whole career in India. And she taught in schools. She was a teaching nun in various parts of the country. And she ended up as principal of one of the biggest colleges in Delhi, and hobnob with the Gandhis and had them as students, and Rajiv Gandhi used to wink at her in the parliament. And that was all interesting. And my so we spend time, Anisha's family is in India, even though she lives here with me, obviously. And she was saying, why don't you set a book in India? Because I'd previously written one set in Ireland and elsewhere. And I felt a bit hesitant because I'm not Indian, even though we go there a lot. However, after we were married, she was looking into this Irish nun of mine, this auntie Agatha. And she looked in properly and noticed that her first posting had been in Pune, or Pune as it was then, and that she taught in a particular school. And her mother, Anisha's late mother, had always said she was taught by Irish nuns, which is a pretty common thing in India. So she rang up her aunt and said, what was that school and when was it? And lo and behold, it turned out that my auntie had taught her mum in her first posting. And that was such a bizarre coincidence. I thought, this is maybe my way in to writing about India, or to setting a story there. So I have the two main characters, the semi-retired, fictional, elderly Irish nun, Sister Agatha Murphy in my story. And I have an Indian hotelier called Avatar Mehta, and the two of them, they accidentally meet and they form an unlikely crime-solving duo in old Delhi, in the center of one of the oldest districts, Chandni Chowk. And Yeah, so that's how they came about.
You have taken what some people would see as a very British cozy crime mystery genre. And I guess, in a way, by way of Murder in Paradise, which again is not set in Britain but is a cozy crime drama, you've taken it even further afield. But it sits very neatly in the Indian culture.
Well, there are such strong links between Britain and India, and I find lots of unexpected ones between Ireland and India too. And yet, for all the shared history, there's not so much knowledge in Britain anymore of India. And I found there's a bit less interest in Britain in India. They look a bit more to America and other parts of the world now. But I wanted to celebrate it, and I thought, there's a richness there to be explored. And Indians love detective fiction. They've got their own detectives and their own traditions and lots of writers. But I thought, I don't think anyone, and as you said, Britain does, but I've never heard of this particular mix of an Irish Indian one. So, we have some things in common with India. There were a lot of Irish troops in India. There was kind of a mutiny against the empire by Irish troops in 1920 there. Gandhi came to visit them before they got executed. And there were lots of personal links between the leadership of both countries. And an Irish guy founded the first newspaper there. And there's lots for them to learn. And there's certainly lots for me to learn. And I think readers here in Britain, I mean, it's not an educational thing, it's fun. It's, there's murder and mystery and backstabbing and betrayal and laughs and a little bit of romance. But along the way, I slip little things in that I hope people will go, oh gosh, that's interesting. I never knew that.
The hotel that plays a centre part in your book, the Delhi Haveli Hotel, that really brings together so many different types of people. You've got Muslim pilgrims there as well, haven't you, coming from Pakistan?
Well, that was based on a real story. A friend of mine who runs a hotel in Delhi told me that. So these days, there are severe restrictions on cross-border travel between India and Pakistan. And it used to be a bit more flexible, and you could have pilgrimage parties, groups, organized groups, going both ways. And you'd have Pakistani Muslims coming to visit Muslim shrines in different parts of India. And of course, there are loads of Muslims in India, maybe 200 million or more, for all I know. And on one of these trips, they were staying at his hotel, and one of the pilgrims disappeared, went missing. No idea what happened. And of course, the police were onto him really heavily. And he was thinking, why are you picking on me? I'm not a prison. I'm just a hotel. That's what, people come and go from hotels as guests. But, a scapegoat had to be found. And it worked out okay in the end for him. But I thought, oh, that's quite interesting, because tensions have heightened since then. So someone like that going missing could be built into all sorts of scary things. Who are they really? And the interesting thing for me with partition in the foundation of India and Pakistan and Bangladesh, so many families had to flee their homes, going both ways. And people were left behind, and people's original homes were in somewhere that was a country that didn't exist then. And they often think of their old homes, the old villages they came from, with great nostalgia and fondness. I mean, you might expect that they would hate the thought of it having been driven out and had family massacred and all this sort of thing. But in fact, they tend to, for instance, my father-in-law is from, he was born in what's now Pakistan. And anytime I meet a taxi driver from Sargodha in kind of Punjab in northern Pakistan, we have great conversations, and he always loves to hear about it. And so the idea that where are people really from and where do they think they belong, I thought that was quite interesting to explore. And I guess, well, I'm living in England now. I'm originally from Ireland. My wife was from India. Her dad was this. From what's now Pakistan, and lots of people, even I guess you grew up in one part of the country and you end up living in another. It's, you know, sometimes interesting to explore who do you think you are?
And there is a great sense of place in this book as well. Chandni Chowk, which is where it's set, you say actually is one of the characters.
And it's also in the book title because it means moonlit or moonlight or silver. Chandni and Chowk is square or place. So Chandni Chowk, moonlit square. And it was founded by Shah Jahan, one of the Mughal emperors, and he set it up for his, it was a main street originally with a reflecting pool in the middle and a kind of a stream running down the middle for his daughter and a marketplace and this sort of thing. And it's grown up to be a really diverse community. There's, you know, some big mosques, there are lots of temples, a big Gurdwara, Jain center. There's a Baptist church, Catholics, Anglicans, all sorts of different people there. So a lot of India is a bit segregated these days, but that's kind of everyone squashed together, narrow lanes, loads of food. And I was warned about it, you know, oh gosh, don't go there because, you know, it's so busy, such a squash. But I love it. It's so interesting and vivid and colorful. And as a writer, that's what you want. You want things to be real and authentic, but turned up a bit. You know, the volume turned up a bit, the color and the contrast turned up a bit. And you get that in India to start with. And in Chandni Chowk, it's up again. And they've got lots of different sections. There's the gold sellers, the silver sellers, the electronics, the plastic buckets, the books, the stationery, spices, the vegetables, the fruit, all in little different areas, or wedding dresses, loads of fabric shops and little shops selling saris. It's like almost being enveloped in a rainbow walking down some of the little lanes when people are airing the material in this. It's but of course at the same time in these narrow lanes, you're having to dodge motorbikes, scooters, carts, and the last mile transport there, because it's so narrow, is often on people's heads, that, you know, a pallet of printer paper maybe, or electronic parts. It's a nice contrast of, you know, having to walk with it on your head, but what you're carrying on your head could be sophisticated electronics. And I find it also a very friendly place, even though, you know, I stand out for obvious reasons, not looking Indian. I find if I hang around with somebody quite noisy or attention grabbing, people might not notice me, and I can just sit there and observe. And occasionally somebody will sit down on a step beside me, and after a while they'll kind of realize, oh, who's this white guy? And it seems quite odd that I wouldn't stick out like a sore thumb, but there's so much else going on, so many other calls on your attention, that and people are always having to watch where they're going, that I find that I can move around and see things and hear things and speak to people. And it's, you know, it's great material for an author.
Murder in Moonlit Square was published in paperback on the 15th of January. Is this the first of a series, Paul?
It is. This one is set in December, so kind of winter in Delhi. Book two, which I completed a few days ago, is set in January. So you may be detecting a pattern here. Book three will be set in February. So I hope that all being well, depending on reader reaction, we'll get all the way around from December to November in the next year.
A chronology of a year in Chandni Chowk. Paul, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today. Murderer in Moonlit Square, as I say, it's now available in paperback from all the normal good bookshops, and I'm guessing that rather well-known online bookshop as well. Paul Waters, we have so much in your life we haven't had a chance to cover. You taught in Poland, you drove a cab in England, you bused in Wales, you were a nightclub cook in New York, you worked in computer systems in Dublin, you presented podcasts for Germans and organised music festivals for beer drinkers. I think we have a 6-part series in this. Will you come back on and tell us about your wider life in the future? I'd love to invite you.
I'd love to, Andrew. Thank you very much.
Paul Waters, our first author of the month for 2026. Thank you so much.